Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for iPad Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Coming up, love stinks, but that's okay because we've got a few anti-Valentine's Day apps on iPad Today. Plus, forget the iPad 2 because the iPad 3 rumors are the new rage. And does this Square app actually work? We'll let you know. All that plus Intellivision on iPad Today. This episode of iPad Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free 14-day trial, go to squarespace.com/iPad Today. Hello and welcome to another exciting edition of iPad Today. I'm Sarah Lane, and it might seem like I'm here by myself. And in fact, well, I'm not actually here by myself because Jammer B is running the board, and thank you for that, Jammer B. But I'm also joined remotely by none other than Ron Richards of iFanboy. Hello, Ron.
Hello, Sarah. Thanks for having me remotely. I'm live from an undisclosed location.
You know, we don't have that many guests call in on iPad Today. Usually it's Leo and me, and if Leo's not around, it's me, and you've been here before in person up at the cottage. But we've never actually had a remote co-host. So you are a very important guinea pig to me today, and I hope that you don't fail and fall on your face.
Well, I'll do my best not to screw up. I'm honored to be the first live remote guest on iPad Today. Thank you so much. I would have loved to have been up there, but I had a meeting and you know, didn't schedules. You know, I don't even have a car. So yeah.
You're a busy dude. You don't have a car? How'd you get up here last time? You hitchhiked?
I borrowed Vance's car.
Well, that's nice of him.
Yeah, it was nice. And I probably next time I do want to come up again. And I have a Zipcar membership. Love Zipcar. Zipcar is the way to go if you are an urban dweller and you don't need to have a car all the time.
Does Zipcar have an iPad app? I've never thought about it because I'm not a customer.
Zipcar has an iPhone app.
Okay, so it's probably something that's iPad compatible.
Yeah, so it's iPad compatible. It's really cool because you can unlock the car with your phone, which is kind of cool. Some cars, not all of them. You can like hit the button and it unlocks it remotely, which is cool. Yeah,
that's how they do that. I always wondered how everybody got their keys to get into those Zipcars and the lots around the city.
As you know, I don't have an iPhone. I have an Android phone, so I can't use that app. They've got a great mobile site, though, that I can use. But the other way it works is they give you a little card with like an RFID chip and you put it over the little lock and then it unlocks the car. So that's how I use it.
Well, I look forward to the next time you can be here in person. And for now, I think the show will be okay. You know, originally I thought I can't have anybody remote because we're showing iPad stuff. But I think between you kind of creatively holding up your iPad to the screen and me following along here, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think we will too. We're pros. We can pull it off.
Well, we like to think so anyway. so this is episode 32 of iPad Today. So I guess once you're past 30, I mean, it's almost all downhill. I guess we have 8 more shows until we're over the hill of shows.
The 40s are the new 30s, so you got time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, women are having babies later and later, so
exactly.
32 is like, I mean, I might as well be 22. Actually, we're not talking about me. We're talking about the episode number. So we always start off an episode of iPad Today putting together a few apps that make up a theme, something that people are interested in or have requested a lot when they email us, or just something that we think is kind of cool. And I originally thought, hey, you know what would be a great idea is some Valentine apps because, you know, Valentine's Day is next Monday and it's such a fun day for hardly anybody. But for those that have Valentine's and they want to go all out and get roses and candy and everything, it's a great day. And then I did a little searching around and I thought, boy, you know, something that's even worse than like crappy Valentine candy is crappy Valentine apps. They're really bad. Not all of them, but for the most part, it's pretty bleak, you know, kind of stupid games and things like that. So thought, let's just be a little bit more honest with what everyone wants or doesn't want and talk about how to avoid the annoyance of Valentine's Day on Valentine's Day, because there's actually a lot more options. And I think that probably appeals to a lot more of us that don't want to be all lovey-dovey and Valentine-y. Ron, are you a big, like, Valentine dude?
Well, it depends. It depends on the wind's blowing this year. This year, I could probably do without it. Last year, maybe not. But yeah, and who knows about next year? But yeah, no, I definitely. I mean, it's the Hallmark quality, the forced holiday stuff is pretty. And I was looking when you sent me the email with the topic. I went to iTunes and I looked to see, like, all right, well, which apps is Apple recommending for Valentine's Day? And it was more on the iPhone side of things, but it was some real stretches. It was some real creativity
cooking apps.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
How to cook on Valentine's Day. It's like, you know, we have to cook the rest of the year too. Well, one of the apps that I wanted to, so this is sort of like anti-Valentine's Day, although, you know, I want to make sure that we point out that these apps are actually very helpful all the time. It's just that Valentine's Day in particular, if you're trying to actually have fun and not get, you know, caught up in fixed price menus and restaurants that are booked and anything. So we'll start with OpenTable because I mentioned restaurants. OpenTable, we have mentioned it on iPad Today in the past, but this is something that I use very regularly when I'm booking last minute restaurant reservations because most of the time when it's last minute, I don't want to go that far. I don't want to put too much thought into it. I live in San Francisco, so I walk a lot. But even if I, you know, was just going to drive a short distance, the geolocation of it all is very helpful. My map is loading slowly because our TWIT network access has been kind of weird lately. But so it's got me in Petaluma. The map will propagate eventually. But these are all the restaurants that are within a short amount of distance. I've set my distance to be pretty low, just so I can get a sense of what's immediately around me. But OpenTable is pretty much telling me what restaurants are nearby. So you can see Heroes in Petaluma has got a 6:30 reservation, a 7, and a 7:30. Rashibi has pretty much the same. So let's just say I wanted, you know, 7's a little early and I wanted to go 7:15. And this is for tonight. It's already letting me know that there's a reservation tonight, so I don't have to, like, wonder if Rubisi's is going to be crazy packed. Maybe this isn't a very Valentine-y place. I'm not really sure. But at that point, I can just make a reservation through OpenTable. I never have to make a phone call to the restaurant. This OpenTable was an iPhone app for quite a while. People have been using it for, I don't know, a couple years now. And I only got into it recently on my iPad. For no real reason in particular, it just got introduced to me this way. And it works perfectly well either way. In fact, I think, I mean, as far as the map aspect of it goes, it's nicer on the iPad. You know, you've just got more real estate. So anything that's sort of visual map stuff just, you know, looks better on the iPad, I think, than the iPhone. So again, it's a great way to get restaurant reservations quickly and easily without, you know, with a couple clicks, you sign in, they'll send you an email confirmation. I've never had anybody at a restaurant go, OpenTable?
OpenTable's totally, like, they're becoming like the Ticketmaster of restaurant reservations.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's the kind, and actually, like, I have a couple of friends who are restaurant owners, and they said, like, we have to use OpenTable because everyone's using it.
Right.
And I love it. And like the iPad version is great because, you know, I use it, like you said, I want to go, you know, make a restaurant reservation. I want to call somebody. That's great. But me, like, there's so many restaurants here in San Francisco. And when I'm in New York, I just like to browse and just say, okay, what restaurants are around that I might not even know about?
Exactly.
And it's got, you know, not only does it have the reservation component, but it's got information. It's got, you know, hooks, you know, so you know what kind of restaurant it is, what the cost of it might be, estimates like that. It's really cool.
So. Yeah. And by the way, if you're, you know, if you say, well, I don't really, you know, maybe you have to drive 10 miles to go to any restaurant. Depending on what your situation is, where you live, you can filter by, you know, I want sushi tonight. Where's the nearest sushi restaurant? Or I only want to pay, you know, between $10 and $20 for dinner, you know, that sort of thing. So there are different parameters besides geolocation, but that's one of the cool parts of it. It's a great app. It's free. And some restaurants have, I've heard some sort of mumbles and grumbles by restaurants that, because OpenTable kind of gets a cut.
It's more of a business issue, though.
But for the end user, it is the ultimate convenience. Yeah. And especially sometimes you load up the app and it's like last minute. And one of the restaurants that is usually booked for whatever reason has an 8:30 reservation open. It's like, done. Okay, that's where we're going.
I
didn't have to think about it.
All the time where I'm like, I'm going to take a long shot. I'm going to go look to see here, you know, and I'm like, boom, got a great reservation 2 hours before dinner. It's fantastic. I actually like the iPad version better than the phone version because it's a little more room to work with. On the phone, I find myself kind of constricted going through lists of restaurants and all that sort of stuff, where the room to breathe on the iPad is a little better.
Yeah, same here. So One of your recommendations, Ron, is, do you say Gobi? Is that how you pronounce it?
That's how it's pronounced.
So what is Gobi?
So Gobi, it's technically a travel application, but you know, my approach, you know, in the whole anti-Valentine's Day kind of thing was, okay, well, I don't want to be stuck at home watching, you know, 30 Rock on Netflix over and over again. Let me find something to do. And that's right. The kind of angle I took at it. And Gobi basically is a travel app that lets you, that shows you what's going on in your area. So it uses the location detection. So, you know, let it know where you are. And then it basically off the main page, it just says, you know, find cool stuff for me to do either today, this weekend, or in a week from now. And then it also gives you some categories. So if you're into like, you know, live music, or, you know, like they've got a section called offbeat attractions, which is kind of cool. You know, like I always like when you go to a city, I like to find like the weird stuff there, like the stuff that you, that isn't the typical, you know, like what small museum might not, you know, about, or like in San Francisco, like that free trolley car museum up in Knob Hill. Like that's fantastic, you know, and like that's a great place. You can lose a couple hours there and go, you know, learn about the streetcars in San Francisco.
And there are always places like that. Yeah. Yeah, anywhere anybody lives, there's always some hidden gem where it's like you just don't know about it. I mean, even if you're in the know and you read all the local papers and things like that, you know, it's worth mentioning. I just did a search around, so it's, you know, it's pulling in from Petaluma, but I did a search for food or drink, and then in the category of, you know, what kind of food or drink, I chose wineries. It looks just like OpenTable. I mean, it's almost exactly the same app.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, even the layout and everything.
I never noticed that until just now, because I played with Gobi a little bit earlier. So yeah, if I wanted to go to Laird Family Estate and try a little vino, it gives you some information about the place that you're going, the actual address, more stuff nearby. If you say, okay, well, let's make a day of it. Let's go to this location. And then, you know, where else can I go? They've got pictures. This is really cool.
Yeah. And it's great. And it's great. It's also, so it's not only good for this, you know, for the city you live in, but it's also a good application to have when you are traveling, when you're somewhere else. You know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, get stuck, you know, your flight gets canceled, you're stuck a day in a city or something like that. Let me find something to do. It's a great way to pull up, you know, kind of stuff that you might not find. And, you know, and the thing is that it's not just limited to, you know, solo adventures. There's stuff for family. There's stuff for, you know, there's museums. There's an extreme section, you know. So it really, I thought it was really good in that it covers a lot, because a lot of time these apps are very specific, and, you know, and it's either just about music or just about museums or just about whatever. This was really good in that it was a broad kind of picture in a nice kind of designed way that made it easily accessible to get to the information. So.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good point, is that a lot of these apps you say, oh, yeah, I want to, you know, they're discovery apps, but they are focused on food or drink or something. It's kind of niche-y. This is like all of the stuff that you would read about in the arts entertainment section, you know, in the Sunday paper. For example, 65 years of woodworking. That's an art event that's happening. Actually, it just happened. It was January 21st. So in Petaluma is still a little bit behind. But there was a very exciting 65 years of woodworking event that happened here recently. So that's Gobi. Gobi is also free. Gobi.com is the website if you want to know more about that. That's awesome. Now, your next suggestion, and I'm curious to know why you chose this one over Now Playing, which is an app that I use, a theater-based app. But the one that you chose, as far as getting away from Valentine's Day and just going and seeing a not rom-com kind of a movie, is Flixster.
Yes, or not seeing Blue Valentine.
Well, Blue Valentine isn't really a good Valentine date movie.
If
for anybody out there is considering it, change your plans.
Just because the word Valentine's in the title doesn't mean you should take your girlfriend or boyfriend to see it.
It's more like a breakup movie.
Yeah, exactly.
How to break up.
Although the part of the movie where they get together is very adorable, and I would have liked the movie about that, but the breakup part, not so much.
It's heart-wrenching. It's a good movie.
It is. Gut-wrenching. So I chose Movies, which is okay, so it's a little complicated. The app is called Movies. It's powered by the site called Flixster, and they recently acquired Rotten Tomatoes. So it's So it's Movies by Flixster with Rotten Tomatoes.
So
it's one of those kind of situations. I have this app on my phone, and I swear by it. I love it. I don't use Now Playing because I have a bizarre loyalty to this. But what I love about this application is it allows you to – it's very simple. You can go in. You can go to you can go to the theaters tab, and you can – it'll show you all the theaters around you. And you can select theaters that are your favorites. So remember which theaters do you go to. And then you just go to the box office tab and look at what's playing in theaters around you. And it gives you movie times. You can watch trailers. You can look at photos. And I just really liked how this app came together, how the left pane – there's a left pane that kind of disappears and reappears with listing of movies. And it's, you know, it kind of gets out of the way when it needs to and lets the movie information go full screen when it has to. And then you can just pull in all that information, you know, the trailer, anything, watch it all on the iPad. And then what's even great is that it's got, you know, it's got all this great information about the let's see if that works. Not so much. It's got information about the Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, for example, I'm looking at Just Go With It, the new movie with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. And 8% of critics liked it. So I now know.
Oh, my goodness. But you know what? Rotten Tomatoes, I'm with you. There are, you know, a lot of people use Metacritic. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes is kind of the first place I go after I see what Ebert thought to see what everybody else thought. It's a really good indicator of what, you know, all yeah. the people who at least get paid to be movie critics yeah. agree on, you know, or yeah. if they're split down the middle and it might be like a, well, maybe we should go and see which one we side with type of thing.
Yeah,
8%, man, that is rough.
Have you seen the trailer? It's like,
I
oh,
don't,
it's,
I already know that it's a kind of movie that would just be something that I wouldn't pay to see, but
well, yeah, especially on a weekend like this when I know, I mean, like, I'm surprised, like, we're gonna go see the Justin Bieber movie this weekend, right? I mean, never say never, we're not gonna miss that movie.
Oh, so. I wouldn't miss it for yeah. the world.
It's in 3D.
Oh my God, it is.
Yeah, it is.
We're kidding. Why? By the way, Ron might not be kidding.
No, I'm totally kidding.
I don't know, I'm just an old woman, so I'm like, he's a singer and he's got funny hair. That's like, that's as much as I know. I feel like someone's mom talking about New Kids on the Block. Yeah. I've become that person. But yeah, anyway, he's got a movie, some people like it.
Yeah, it's in 3D. There you go. But 58% of critics like this.
Well, so and with Flixster, with Movies by Flixster, which is its yep. official name, you could watch the trailer and get a better sense if you've, you know, it's your kind of movie, or if it's campy yep. enough to still be fun, or if you're like, oh no, this, my suspicions are correct. This is going to be 2 hours of torture.
And it's and it's also great because it's got a tab just for upcoming movies. And I don't know, I'm a big movie buff, and I love, you know, and one of my favorite things to do is just watch trailers. And
oh,
so.
Yeah.
So this Valentine's Day, I might just sit on my couch and spend an hour watching trailers, you know, and just making plans for the future, you know, so.
Well, it's nice to have this all in one place. I mean, rather than going to apple.com/trailers and kind of hunting around and then going online and figuring out yeah. how to get tickets and this and that, it's like you just got your whole setup is in one place. Yeah. Now playing, just for anybody who uses that over Flixster, is not the exact, let me see if I can find it here. Now playing is, it's similar. It does a lot of similar things. It's not exactly the same. You can manage your Netflix account through Now Playing, which is kind of nice. I don't have it set up on this computer.
I believe you can do that on movies as well.
Oh, really?
I can do that on my on the phone app on Android. I'm not sure if it's on the iPad app or not. I imagine it would be, but yeah.
Oh, perhaps. Well, it's good. So you've got options. Flixster is, it's nice looking. There's a lot of information. Played around with yep. it this morning. I mean, I'm in Petaluma, so these are the theaters that I go to at least on the weekends, which is usually when I see movies. But it's good stuff. Now, finally, Ron, you go to more movies, music shows than I do. I yeah. kind of have to be dragged, but I always have fun. It's one of those things where it's like, sometimes I think, I don't want to go to a show. It's going to be crowded. People are going to be taller than me. I won't be able to see anything. But I'm always glad when I go. But you're kind of the expert, and you like an app called Bandmate.
Well, I think, and I don't know if I like it. I just started using it, and it's interesting because you're right. I do. I love going to music shows. I love going to see live music all the time. I went last night, actually. I was in Oakland. And saw a band called The Forgetters, which was awesome.
Where did they play?
They play at the Oakland Metro Opera House, which sounds a lot more fancier than it is, and it's actually just a warehouse in downtown Oakland.
A warehouse opera house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oakland is just yeah. it does things like that.
But it's interesting because like when I used to like back in the day before the internet, when I lived in New York, I would get the Village Voice and I would open to the section where all the club listings would be, and every week you'd see what bands were coming, and you'd have to take notice to when the tickets were going on sale and who was coming to town and when was it, and I, you know, it was really difficult and analog to find out when bands are playing.
Totally.
And then, but now as the internet has come along, you know, we've stopped doing that. And there was a time period where I was missing shows because I just didn't know what was going on. So I do use the website sonicliving.com, which doesn't have an app. And this app, Bandmate, I checked out because I was hoping it would do what Sonic Living does, because I really want Sonic Living to make an app. But it basically, they do the same thing. you can, with Bandmate, you can link it to either scan your iTunes library. So if you have all of your music on your iPad, it will scan your iTunes library and load in all the bands that you listen to. Or conversely, if you don't use your iPad to listen to music, which I don't, so I don't have any music on my iPad, you can link it to your Last.fm account.
Which is what I did, actually. Yeah. You're looking at all of the songs that I've listened to via Last.fm. Some of them I don't even remember. I think maybe I've let it play a few times.
And that's the thing. So you can look at your artists, and then like you have up on the screen, there's a little toggle switch on the right, whether or not to include them in the results.
So if I say Dead String Brothers, I don't even know who they are. I'm not going to like keep close tabs on this band particularly. You can pick and choose.
Exactly. Now, the only problem with that is that I've listened to like, you know, 30,000 songs since I've started using Last.fm or something like that. It takes a long time to go through and say yes, no, yes, no. But if you do that, then if you use this app, it becomes much more powerful for you because then you could just go to the events tab and it will give you a chronological list of all the shows that are around you that are filtered by the bands you listen to.
Yeah, with the assumption, of course, that if you're listening to music, and again, you can customize it, but for the most part, if you're listening to music that you like, you'd be interested when that artist comes to your neck of the woods. In fact, there's a singer named Martha Wainwright, who I loved the song of hers a few years ago. I'm not even really that familiar with her, but she's got a beautiful voice. She's playing tonight at the Great American Music Hall.
Exactly. I noticed that show as well. She's great. I love her. She's awesome.
You're going tonight?
No, I'm not going. I just found out about it today like you did. So.
But isn't that funny? Because I went, I wouldn't have gone to Great American Music Hall. That's a beautiful, smallish venue in San Francisco, by the way, for anyone who's not familiar with it. But it's a nice place to see a show.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have gone to their website to see who was playing. I just wouldn't have. I know I wouldn't have.
And like, for example, so we're looking on Valentine's Day. And like, for example, you know, great way if you're lonely heart and you don't have anybody, you know, nobody in your life romantically, you know, bunch of shows. That's a great place to meet people. You know that you like the same kind of music. And just looking at it, like Cake is playing in San Francisco. They're playing the Fillmore. The Decemberists are playing in Oakland. Most Def canceled. He was playing Yoshi's, but he canceled.
Oh, that's a bummer. That would be very non-Valentine-y, I would think.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on what you're both into.
Exactly,
Martha Wainwright might not be the best place to go on Valentine's Day, but that's okay because she'll be gone by then.
A little angsty, but it's a great way to see what is going on. It's another way to see what is going on, to be in touch. And what's really cool too is that if you click on any artist, you get a full kind of artist page and there are links to videos and photos and information. And it's really for a music lover. And if you're not using the website Sonic Living, it's a great way to find out what's going on around you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm looking at Daft Punk's page. We've got a bunch of pictures here that you can scroll through. I mean, I kind of know what their deal is, but maybe I'm just kind of into artist discovery. There's a whole synopsis about their history. There are links to, you know, the artist links to sort of figure out where they are online, YouTube videos. It's really cool. This is a neat app. It's $2.99. So for $3, if you're a music person, and especially if you're a person who likes to translate what you like and go see these people in your neck of the woods, and it also allows you to, I mean, you can expand to like within 100 miles.
Oh,
if you're willing to, you know, make the trek to see this artist that you're like, I had no idea Lady Gaga was playing in San Jose. I'm going to go kind of thing. Or whatever. Or Metallica.
Would go to Lady Gaga in San Jose.
You know, I almost did. She came through San Jose recently, and I had to turn down some tickets, and I heard it was a really good show. So whatever. But anyway, so those are our non-Valentine-y options. So not only are they great apps, but they're good apps for if you're just trying to get away from the annoyance of February 14th, which, let's just be honest, I mean, even if you have a significant other and you guys have dinner plans and this and that, it's like, it can just be kind of a hassle, and there's so much pressure. So, you can go to a restaurant, you can see a band nearby, you can go to a movie, or go see the 46 Years of Woodworking here in Petaluma that actually happened last week. But yeah, I'm sure they'll do it again next year before Valentine's Day. For the links to all the apps we mentioned, you didn't have to write anything down. Don't worry about it. We'll put it in our show notes at twit.tv/IPT. That's the same place you can watch all of our past episodes, and you can subscribe to all of the shows so that if you don't watch us live, you can just watch them whenever you have time. If you do watch us live, you already know what time we're live. But if you're watching this later and you'd like to watch us live next time, we record on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 p.m. Pacific. That's standard time. And in April, it'll be daylight time again. Hallelujah. And if you have app ideas of your own, And you guys always do. We're always using your ideas. Shoot us an email at iPadToday@twit.tv. Before we get to the news of the week, and the iPad news is like, I keep waiting for it to just calm down, but because of the iPad 2 rumors, and now it's getting even more crazy and subscriptions.
There's so much going on. It is so hard to keep up.
It's so true. Yeah, so yeah. Before we get to at least some of the news, because if we talked about all iPad news, we'd never stop the show, and I just can't talk that long. Want to take a quick second to thank Squarespace for being our sponsor this week. If you've heard me talking about Squarespace, you might consider it more of like a gushing thing. They're the blog engine I use, but I say blog engine, but they're really much more than that. It can be a blog if that's all you want to do, but it's really a high quality website, and it's for people who are design pros or total novices that want nothing to do with CSS, don't want to write one, closing tag or anything like that. It's very customizable way to maybe have a photography gallery or start your own forums, some heated debates. You can choose from a variety of Twitter widgets. They have a bunch of Squarespace templates that you could just use outright. Like, that's the template I want, about 100 of them that you can choose from. And from there, you can customize to your heart's desire. You could build your own template from scratch. I know Kevin Rose did that with his Squarespace blog. He wanted it to be really simple, so that's the style he has. I have a much more sort of intricate Squarespace blog that I had some designers who work at Squarespace, who are like the nicest people in the world, help me with, because they're much more talented than I am. I love how it looks. It's on the examples page, so if you're sort of like, how much different can blogs look? Go to squarespace.com. and click on the examples tab, and you get a really good sense of how people are using Squarespace. I mean, you can sell your artwork, or you can sell anything, really. Again, the photography stuff is really nice, but the point is that it's customizable. There are a lot of templates. This is important. The iPhone app has been around for a while, and I used to use it. I'd load it and just make sure that if there was any sort of like weird spam, I could get rid of that, or update, or kind of manage my comments. There's an iPad app now too that works for me, especially if I'm actually going to compose something when I'm out and about. It makes a lot more sense to me to have my iPad keyboard rather than my iPhone, because on an iPhone, there's only so much you really want to write, because again, you don't have that screen real estate. So the iPad app is awesome. They also updated it recently. There were I found some kind of buggy, crashy stuff. So if you've tried out the iPad app in the past and you haven't updated it recently, or you haven't given it another chance, please do, because I think they have all that stuff ironed out. Love the people at Squarespace. And if you want a 14-day free trial, if you're not sure that you want to switch, maybe you're still on WordPress and you're like, well, if I import everything into Squarespace and I'm not happy, what am I going to do? That's cool. You don't even have to like enter your credit card information or anything. You can just try Squarespace out for 14 days. You can import everything. By the way, the import feature works really well. They'll let you export back. If you're not happy, they're not going to hold your data hostage. You can export out and go about your merry way. But I really think you're going to like Squarespace. Again, 14-day trial. There's no reason not to, put together a cool blog. Everyone's talking about the Tumblrs and the WordPresses does anyone talk about Typepad anymore? I'm not sure. I guess some people do, but Squarespace is where it's at. So if you want to make sure that they know you came through us, go to squarespace.com/iPad today, because that's actually where all the cool people are going. That's the URL of the future, squarespace.com/iPad today. And we thank them for sponsoring this episode. And Ron, I know Revision 3 is also a big Squarespace, friend of Squarespace. So you're used to working with them, and they're good people.
My personal site is on Squarespace at ronxo.com. In fact, I posted video from the show I went to last night in Oakland. I'm tying it back to the music thing. But yeah,
perfect.
I went to that show last night. I sucked the video off my little Kodak camera. I uploaded it to Vimeo, got the embed code, put it on Squarespace, published it this morning, posted it on Twitter. It was, I was a internet dream this morning. It was great.
There you go. I mean, that's a real world expert scenario right there. So, yeah. I mean, you just have no reason. 14 days. Give it a try. Moving on to the news section of the show. Gosh, it's like I almost don't even want to talk about these crazy iPad 3 rumors that seem to have surfaced overnight, literally overnight. The article that I read was actually written by MG, who was the guest host last week, and he talks a lot about Apple stuff. And He wrote a little bit.
Just a little bit.
He wrote this article. You know, I mean, I clearly know him, but I read it and I went, I can't believe you wrote this. It's so speculative, and there's so many like perhapses and maybes and potentialies. And if you read the article, in a nutshell, the iPad 2 has pretty much been outed. Apple as the only company not reporting on the exact specs of what the iPad 2 will have, which is thinner, lighter, same resolution screen, camera.
If the SD card slot is the reality, like, because I just actually just bought my own personal iPad, and I was so paralyzed. Like, do I buy one? Do I wait for the? And if there was a clear date of when they announced it would be, I would have waited. But I was like, no, I need one. I need one for work. I'll just get it. And if I want to upgrade, I can. And really, the iPad 2 things that have been leaked, the only thing that interests me is that SD card slot, because my complaint about the iPad is that it's so locked down.
Right.
And so give me a way to get information on and off and easy without syncing through iTunes.
So no SD card for you is a deal breaker.
Yeah, it probably will be. Like, if they announce the iPad 2 with no SD card, I'm not going to upgrade, because I don't need the camera on it. FaceTime, I don't need that.
I was at the Apple store this morning buying the Verizon iPhone, and I was chatting with one of the guys who works there, trying to get information out of him. I don't even know why I bothered, because they don't know anything. But we were kind of talking about it, and we were sort of in agreement. And this actually is somewhat of an answer to Farhan from Liverpool, who wrote us this morning, actually, and said, over the past 24 hours, rumors are circulating that the iPad 3 will be launched in September. I'm currently saving for an iPad 2, but should I wait for the iPad 3 instead? What would you advise? I think, Ron, your point of if we know that the iPad 2 will be a nice upgrade from the original iPad, but not like it's like iPhone 3G to 3GS.
It's
the 3GS was a bump, but the iPhone 4 was a completely different thing.
Well, my whole thing about it is that the I feel as if the upgrade paths on a lot of the technology, especially from Apple, have gotten out of sync with the usage patterns of people. I think they're coming out with upgrades to the products before the average user is ready for them. So for example, like me as case in point, I need an iPad. I was waiting to hear about iPad 2. I was waiting. And finally, I'm like, you can't wait. I don't want to live paralyzed. Like, just if you want an iPad, go get one. You know what I mean? If you're going to wait for the iPad 2, just pick it up. When the iPad 3 comes out, if you really want it, you could probably sell yours used, get a couple $100 back, and then get the iPad 3 if you want. It's just this idea of waiting is, I feel like, because you're depriving yourself.
Right.
You know, like you're holding back from having fun. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I agree with you. At the same time, if the iPad 2 isn't like the magical, if you're familiar with the iPad, you're drooling over your friend's iPad and you really want the next greatest thing, yeah, maybe you'd want to wait. But it's like, again, this is speculative. I mean, these are rumors.
And iPad 3 is so speculative, like you said. I mean, there's little to know. And of course, they're going to come out with an iPad 3 eventually. I think the fall is really soon. I think, if anything, they'll announce it in the fall, but it won't come out till like Christmas or later on. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk of how they're trying to, do like twice yearly cycles rather than yearly, so that they're just moving more. And obviously, some of this speculation is coming from good sources. John Gruber of Daring Fireball is obviously, he's somebody that people listen to when he has ideas of what may be happening with Apple. You know, I'm using air quotes, but these are folks who generally have a good understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, maybe more than the average person. But again, just rumors. So Farhan, I say, I agree with Ron. If you want an iPad right now, don't wait. Maybe wait for the iPad 2.
But this iPad 3 thing, like, it could be like when they roll out the iPod flavors. You know, like you had the iPod, then you had iPod Nano, and then the Shuffle, and they're trying to tweak the products to fit the different audiences to get more people using them. So maybe the iPad 3 is there's a lot of speculation, but it could be a slimmer version. It could be a smaller one. You know, kind of like with the Kindle, they came out with the DX, the larger one, and there was the smaller one. It could be any variety of things.
So. Exactly. So we're still a little unclear of how Apple is going to work with some of the news publishers to figure out how iTunes subscriptions are going to work, because of course a lot of the publishers don't want to have to go through iTunes because they don't want Apple to take a 30% cut of sales. And for the most part, it's the story is still kind of coming together, but for the most part, it sounds like Apple's saying, hey, we'll let you sell subscriptions outside of iTunes, but you're going to have to give people an option to sell within iTunes as well. And the publishers aren't happy with that because they say, well, if people subscribe to more than just one magazine, obviously they're going to go through iTunes because they can manage it all in one place. One good example of subscription in use, of course, is the Daily. MG and I went through the Daily in pretty, you know, great detail last week, and I just wanted to go check it out one more time after a week of use. I've been using it. I was very enthusiastic for the first, I would say, 3 days. Yep. And then I kind of forgot about it. And I launched it again yesterday and this morning. And I have had a lot of crashes. Now, apparently they've upgraded since then. I have the newest version.
It was weird with the newest version. They said, make sure you delete your previous version before you install this one. So it wasn't like an update. It was like a reinstall. It was
weird. You know what's weird, too, is, yeah, and I think that was in order to get the first version was version 1, and 1.0.1 was the one that you had to actually delete the app and then reinstall it. Well, I have 1.0.2, so I didn't delete anything. However, so this is a good example of, well, now it just started to load again, but I loaded my daily edition this morning. But when I loaded it again just now, it told me that an episode was being delivered, presumably because they've updated the newspaper since I launched it this morning, which they are trying to do throughout the day so that they're at least up on their top news, right? Nice headline, the Daily. Obviously this morning the headline was he's going to talk later today, and now he already has made his speech, so they had to update it. But it still doesn't feel immediate. And I think more and more it's starting to bother me. I thought, well, maybe this is just a different way to consume news. The Daily is not the place that I'm going to go. If I've come in from an hour in my car and I haven't had access to news, I do, but let's just say that my radio wasn't working, I'd get online and I'd launch CNN or a variety of other news sources via my browser. I wouldn't go to the Daily, and I think that that's the real issue. Ron, what do you think? Have you been...
Yeah, I played with the Daily a little bit. I love media. I love printed media. I love magazines, things like that. And the whole magazine experience on the iPad has been one of my biggest, like, thorns in my side. It's it's so perfect for it. And, like, something like Project from Virgin is, like, it shows exactly what it could be. And then, like, Wired comes out with this great thing. And, like, I have a print subscription to Wired, but I can't get the digital version. I've got to pay for each individual. I'm not going to pay twice.
Right.
You know, like if you have a print subscription, you should get the digital version as well, or it should be an option where you pay like $10 for the print edition and $20 for the print plus digital, you know, that sort of thing. So when the Daily came out, I got all excited. But yeah, I the same complaint is that it seems as if they got a really cool application built, and admittedly, it's cool. I mean, the way you navigate it and stuff like that is really neat. And they're applying an old world approach to it, and that we're going to publish once a day. And or when they do need to publish, it's a pain in the ass, and they've got to do it. Like they've got to figure out how to make this be like when I load the Daily. Oh, it just crashed, didn't it?
It crashes a lot. I mean, whatever was wrong has not been fixed, as far as I'm concerned.
And it should be that when you open up the Daily, you see one thing, and when I open it up 20 minutes later, I see something completely different because it's been updated.
Exactly.
But it's I mean, and isn't that what we learned on the web? I mean, we've been doing this for 15 years now on the web. Why it should be doable through this app. So,
well, I agree. They haven't figured out how to update it behind the scenes. That's non-invasive, where I don't launch it and then go, oh, okay, they're updating. I'm just going to look at my beach ball for a minute. The web has figured this out.
I'll enjoy the free trial, the sponsored 2 week period. But after 2 weeks, I don't know if I'm subscribing. You know,
I don't either. And I think that what's the most telling is, when do I stop launching it daily? And I already have.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I thought, well, I should check in with the Daily again. I haven't seen if they've changed anything, and that tells me right there that it hasn't captured my interest enough to go back. I read a lot of websites daily, you know, many times a day. And so, you know, I'd be interested to see if anybody watching or listening has a different take on the Daily, or has noticed anything that's improved, that's gotten worse, that takes some getting used to, any of that stuff. I'd love to hear your feedback. But I have to say, I'm thinking that they're going to have to make some major changes in order to keep the subscriber base that they're hoping for, considering that they hired a bunch of people.
And it doesn't solve for the whole subscriptions and iTunes problem, which is that's the problem, is that you know, is, and the fact that Apple wants a cut of subscriptions is like, obviously, if Apple's probably coming up with some sort of iMagazines, like the iBooks application or something like that. So they obviously want to steer people towards that direction. But it just, again, it's just like, it's this perfect device for reading like magazine like content in a digital thing. And we deal with this in my day job. I work for Graphically, which is a digital comics company. It's the same thing. Like when we hear this stuff about, you know, in-app purchases and that sort of thing, it affects us. And they really need to figure it out and just say, this is what it is, this is how it works, and maybe not be so greedy.
Exactly. Not be so buggy, because it just crashed again. So the daily, I need more from you. Yeah. Moving on to kind of an interesting story. Ron, you spend a lot of time in New York, much more than I do. Yeah. But I don't know how often you stay at the Plaza Hotel. It's a pretty ritzy place on Central Park South.
South, yeah.
I've actually never been there. I've never even had tea at the Plaza, but I know it's where Home Alone was shot.
Yep.
I know a few things about the Plaza. It's a very, you know, it's one of the fancy old school hotels in New York City. And now the Plaza Hotel is offering iPads in all of their rooms, which you might say, well, what do you do with that? How does that work? It's really cool, actually. It's not just to be able to have access to the internet, but I actually talked to Christopher Gray, who's the CTO of a company called Intellity, which makes this customized app that the Plaza is using. And they're also working with like Hilton Hotels and other hotel chains to figure out how this works. So they do a variety of things. There's environmental controls. So via your iPad, you can actually you can dim the lights or change the temperature of the room or things
like that. Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't that the coolest? Yeah. And I said to him, well, how does that work? I mean, is it Bluetooth? How does that work? And he said, no, it's via Wi-Fi, and they have pre-configured controllers in each room that are hardwired to the lights and the thermostat. Now, the lights, I think it's cool to be able to dim the lights from the iPad, but the thermostat is something that's a huge issue with me, because in hotels, you never really know. If you're in an unfamiliar place and you're trying to set a nice temperature, oftentimes I'll either wake up freezing or really hot in the middle of the night and have to get up in the dark and find the thermostat, and it's very...
And sometimes they're like on auto and you're hitting the temperature button up and down, but then it just reverts back to 67 or whatever
exactly.
It was.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be nice just to reach and say... 71. That's what I want. So it'll do that. You can order room service. You can schedule wake up calls. You can get information about just, you know, the city that you're in, and you know, some of the hotel amenities, if there's a gym and things like that. So it's really cool.
A couple of questions. Yeah. Is it tethered to the room?
So you mean like physically?
Yeah. Like, can I take it out and about with me in the city, or does it have to stay in the room?
So the software, the app itself that Intellity makes wouldn't limit you to the room, but it's all just based on how much they trust you.
They're putting iPads in the room. Are they like, do they have like a chain on it like some hotels have with the remote control? Like, can you take the iPad physically out of the room or not?
I would guess. So at the Plaza, nothing's locked down at the Plaza. They're just going to charge you for the iPad if you happen to steal it. And they'll probably charge you $900 and you sign for it when you come in. But they do have security restrictions. I mean, obviously, if you've got an iPad in your room, they don't want you downloading a bunch of apps because not only could they get in trouble, you know, it's sort of like, it just, they need to keep some control over apps. So that's actually where, you know, in your settings area, for anybody who, we showed this little trick on episode of iPad Today a long time ago, but if you go into the restrictions area in your settings, you can actually enable restrictions and like lock down Safari or YouTube or app purchases or things like that. So that's obviously something that they incorporate. That doesn't even really have to do with this customizable software, but obviously the hotels will have to keep some sort of a handle on it, because even if you could download any app of your choice, they still want to wipe it before the next customer comes in to play with an iPad. You know, they don't want my Shazam and my Picpostrous and all that stuff.
But it's really cool that they're doing it. I mean, like, I actually used to work for a hotel company. And I worked for Starwood. And they were always looking at technology and how can they integrate into the hotels and things like that. And so this is really cool. And hopefully, I mean, maybe this is like the beginning of a trend that we see. I mean, this custom app, that's really cool.
I know, isn't it cool? You know, I asked Christopher also, hey, so if I've got this app, you know, let's say... I could, you know, it's just something that can be added to an iPad. Can I add an app to my iPad and then use it as I go from hotel to hotel? Let's say I'm a business traveler and I travel to a lot of different hotels, or maybe like five of the same hotels over and over. And he said, right now, the apps are tailored per, you know, to hotel. Like the Hilton Group is going to have their app that makes sense with the amenities that they have for their guests. But they are working on a multi-property version that they expect to be out later this year. So that's really cool. I mean, the idea is that you could take your room configurations with you on the road and just kind of have it all on your iPad or your iPhone is really cool. So
I love the idea of the customized experience that we've come to expect on the web and on our computers now being applied to physical world. It's awesome. Fun.
When the iPhone came out, the last thing I thought was, boy, would I like to be in control of my hotel thermostat from an app on this guy. But it's like already a reality. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. So thanks to Christopher Gray for answering my questions. Again, that company's Intellity. And if you're staying at the Plaza, there's just one more reason to feel very la-di-da about the whole thing, because you'll have your own room iPad. Let's see. What should we do now? You know, I was going to talk about this Grey's Anatomy app, but I think I'm going to save it for next week because I worry about playing an episode of Grey's Anatomy on the show in order to show off this app. We'll save it for next week. I know.
It's on the app.
What's that?
It's on the app. I've downloaded the app.
Have Grey's you? Anatomy. Are you a Grey's Anatomy fan?
Oh, yeah. I've been watching from the beginning. Yeah, and that's why I laughed, because I saw that app when it got released and I was like, well, I have the ABC app. But then I realized it's so much more for the Grey's Anatomy fans.
Well, you know what? Okay, so now that we've teased it, I won't go too far into it because I really don't want to get in trouble. And even if I said I don't care, YouTube will take down anything, you know, if we break copyright notices. But I'll just give you a sense of what's going on here. What Grey's Anatomy, the folks at ABC have done is they've created this interactive app that
it's really cool
that uses this technology so that if a Grey's Anatomy episode is playing, it will use the audio from your TV or whatever device you're listening to the episode on. It pulls the audio. It's like a Shazam, you know, where Shazam will tell you what song you're listening to. It'll pull the audio and recognize this is a Grey's Anatomy episode and it's episode 5 from the 3rd season. And then it gives you all of this interactive information, like director's commentary about a certain scene, or gives you a social networking tools to figure out which one of your friends who's also using this app might also be watching this episode. So you're not just sort of like blindly tweeting out, who else is watching Grey's tonight? This is such an amazing episode, which we all know people do. And you're like, oh, has nothing to do with me. You know, you can target your Twitter friends that actually care. So this is, it's really, I haven't tried it out, but I know actually something I know the technology because it's actually similar to an app called Into Now. Ron, are you familiar with this app?
I'm not familiar with that one.
So Into Now is, it's an iPhone app. So as you can see, it's not supposed to be run on the iPad. Well, it's fine to be run on the iPad. It's just not enabled. But what you do is, if you want to, let's say, just try it now. So if there was any television with the audio up in this room, and I've tried this. I tried it at the gym, I tried it at my house, I tried it showing an episode of a TV show that was on YouTube where I got pulled down. What Into Now does, it's actually exactly like Shazam. So it'll give you, you know, let's say we'll pretend we're listening to something. It's listening to us, and it's probably going to say, I don't know what TV show that is, because it's not
iPad today.
Because, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Oh, man, that would be such an ego boost. But what it does is it listens for audio, and it actually goes back 5 years. So it's not just like, oh, this is the State of the Union address. Obviously, obviously that's what it is. That's not a hard one. I mean, this could be like an episode of Masterpiece Theater from 2009. And you could have it DVR'd and it still gets it. I mean, I've kind of tested this app. It's sort of mind-blowing. It's free, by the way, so it's actually kind of fun. And you think to yourself, why would you want to do this? But again, there's this push lately. Yeah, so the computer says, no, I have no idea what show that is. It's because we're not prime time yet. We'll get there eventually.
Soon, someday. But this audio detection thing is really, it's actually kind of interesting because it's that same, Nielsen is experimenting with this tech too on ratings reportings by having a computer or a box in your TV listening and then detecting what you're watching and sending that information to Nielsen. And some other ratings companies are doing that sort of thing. So this listening technology, the fact that they can detect what you're watching, and like this Grey's Anatomy thing, I haven't tried it yet either, but I cannot wait to try it because it's really neat. It's going to hear what I'm doing and then give me relevant information. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. And it's worth noting that it's sponsored by Lexus. So you get when there's commercial breaks, if you're watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy, in its initial run, is Grey's Anatomy even on? Yeah, of course it's on still. Haha. But if you're watching, let's say, a DVR'd episode, well, there are if you're watching it live, or you know, when it's the episode premieres during commercial breaks, they have like games and interactive stuff to do while the actual episode isn't playing. If you're watching it later, some of that stuff changes. So they've really thought about how to kind of have that live fun aspect. We're all watching together. Let's chat.
Which is really interesting because it's counter to the time shifting environment that we live in now. Like, for example, like I don't have cable and I watch everything well after the fact. And so I wonder what, you know, like when I'm watching Grey's Anatomy on Saturday, when it was on Thursday, whether, you know, I'm going to miss out on that. And does that mean I'm going to want to watch it live again to watch it with my friends? Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, so that's cool. So if you're a Grey's Anatomy fan, definitely check out this app. It's free. It's a fun experiment. If you're a fan, you love this. You know, you want to like hang out with other fans and get more information behind the scenes stuff everybody loves. Intune Now is also free, and that again is the app that can just identify whatever you're watching, give you more information about it. And again, there's that whole social networking. I'm watching this right now, but it's better to at least be talking to the other folks that are also watching it so that you're not just saying, hey, I'm watching the show that no one else is watching. And you know, the community is the point. So there is something to be said about social networking around television shows.
I hope they don't get rid of the app when Lexus pulls out the sponsorship. Like, will the app stay around or will they get another sponsor? Like, that's the sponsored apps.
I know. Because Lexus is, I mean, make no mistake, it's very obvious that they're sponsoring this app. I mean, this is a total experiment. I see it as ABC saying, let's give this a shot with a show that has a lot of really, really loyal, rabid fans that want to know a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff and really want to...
How upset do you think the ABC techie guys are mad that Lost ended? Because this would be perfect for Lost.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. The conspiracy theories, the crossword puzzles,
The references, like what that logo means and where...
Oh, my gosh.
You know, totally.
Very true. So anyway, check it out if you want to. Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's amazing what apps can do, especially the picking up of the audio is like, who knew? But it works for any audio, not just music. Want to make sure that we feature a couple of our viewer submissions from this week. Jim Simons has an easy solution for tangled earbud cables, which is a problem that I have because I now take my iPad to the gym pretty much every time I go to the gym. If I'm going to be on the bike or pretty much anytime I'm not on the treadmill, because when I'm running, I can't read. But otherwise, I love my iPad. It's like the only way I can work out. And I'm doing a bunch of things, but I usually listen to Pandora or my music. So I've got my headphones with me because I don't want to bug anybody. And my headphones are just constantly in a mess. So Jim has this very novel and cheap solution to keep your earbuds untangled, which is basically just some sort of a credit card or AAA card that's in this case that you're not using anymore. I mean, instead of like cutting it up and throwing it away, you just put a few notches on either side, wrap your cables around it, and throw it in your bag somewhere. Because that's the problem is that, you know, I can loop them up all nicely, but then I throw them in my pocket and somehow they all get messed up. So this is like a flat surface to keep them from tripping over themselves. I don't know about you guys, but earbud issues are the bane of my existence. I can't tell you how much time I spend unraveling my earbuds. Ron, are you with me here?
You might want to look in. That might be a little OCD going on there. You might want to look into that. That's I mean that's a very clever idea. I mean, I go through earbuds like crazy. I mean, like I actually don't have any Apple ones left because I've broken them and they've gone, you know, gone through the wash and things like that. So I mean, that's a really good idea. I still have an iPad Nano that I take to the gym, and I just wrap it around that because it's so small.
The Nano is small enough so that actually works out well.
But the iPad, not so much.
It's DIY. I can't not feature some of these like cool DIY projects, especially for a credit card where, I mean, what do you use credit cards for besides, I mean, once they're not credit cards anymore?
Identity theft. That's really it. Once they're not, right, you know, once they've expired, that's about it. So.
Really quick, want to thank Bob Bittner. He's from Charlotte. He made sure I didn't call it Charlotte. Charlotte, Michigan. He was the one who turned me on to the Grey's Anatomy app. So just want to make sure that Bob gets his due because I wouldn't have known about it otherwise. So thanks, Bob.
From Charlotte.
Also, we have a voicemail. Jeremy, is this voicemail opening up okay? This one's from Alan in Las Vegas, and he's a little confused by App Store ratings, so let's hear his question.
Hi, Sarah and Lee. Love the show, listen to the podcast, and watch it on my iPod at the gym. Great show. Got a question for you. I usually go and look at the applications that y'all recommend, and sometimes some of them don't have the best ratings if you look at the app's ratings. Could you on your show sometime talk about how you and Leo feel about the app's ratings and give me some feedback of why a great app might have low ratings? Or I know there are a lot of them in the mind of the beholder, but I'd love to hear your comments. Thanks. This is Alan from Las Vegas.
Hi, Alan from Las Vegas. Ron, Leo and I are always talking about how ratings, it's like you have to take ratings with a grain of salt and kind of read into them. And, you know, besides the fact that people can give good or bad ratings based on a variety of motivators, one of the key things that I look at is when the app was last updated, because in the iTunes store, well, the App Store, you know, when you're looking at the reviews for any app, there'll be like overall reviews and then current reviews that relate to the reviews that relate to the current version of the app. So sometimes apps suck off the bat, but then the developer fixes them.
Yeah, or they're broken, there's a bug, and I know a lot of times, a lot of the app development I've worked on, we've discovered bugs or complaints from the comments and reviews and then fixed it, done an update, and then people don't always come back and be like, they fixed that thing I complained about.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's also like, it's kind of human nature to go write a bad review or give a bad rating than actually give a good one. And I love the ones where you look at it, it's like a 1-star rating, and but the comment is like raving about it, where the person just screwed up. So it's, you know, like it's really, you got to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, the way I use it, the same way I use the ratings in iTunes as well as on Amazon and on Yelp, is that I look at what the star rating is, I read what the person is, and then I use that to inform my decision and don't let it dictate like, well, that only has 3 stars, so I shouldn't get it. Like maybe it wasn't the right app for half the people who tried it, but it was good for the other people. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of reviews that it's like 1 star, and then you read the review and you go, well, wait a second, I don't think this person really knows how this app works. I think they might have been looking for a different app altogether. Or there's 500 reviews. You know, if there's the more reviews, overall reviews, definitely take into consideration, because it just kind of gives you a sense of how the app has performed over time. Obviously, the current reviews are really the most relevant, because apps do tend to get updated quite often. But I mean, the more reviews there are, if it's like 4 stars across the board and there's 600 reviews, I'm more apt to be like, hey, this is an app that really appeals to a lot of people, and they've gone out of their way to rate it, because as we all know, we get pop-up, you know, rate suggestions all the time, and I'm always saying, no thanks, or I'll do it later. So, I mean, if you want to rate something well, you really like it. I mean, if there's 3 reviews and it's all, you know, full stars, then I'm usually thinking it's the developer and 2 of their friends that have rated it well. So there are a lot of factors, Alan, that go into figuring out if an app is really worth your time based on ratings. They're definitely good to watch, but they're not always going to, I mean, you're not always going to agree with a lot of people that have reviewed this app that you're deciding on. So
I mean, really, I mean, you want to look for the 1-star apps and I look for consistency and trends.
Yes.
Like if I see a lot of people railing on the app saying it's awful and here's why, then okay, I'm not going to install that one. But then if I see like, you know, a rating between 3 and 5 stars and some good discussion, okay, this might be worth taking a look at. And then a 5-star rating with everybody raving about it, clearly it's a must have. So right. That's how I kind of look at it.
Totally. So hope we answered your question. The ratings, the App Store, it's an art. It's an art, but you'll get there. I think it's time for our AppCap Awards, Ron.
Yes.
Do you have an AppCap?
I do. I need to go get it. Hang on.
Okay,
right,
I need to go get mine too.
Yeah.
I'm feeling patriotic today. While Ron's getting his hat, I'm just going to go ahead here and be Aunt Sam for all of you, for all of you in the U.S. and those who aren't. Hope you're feeling patriotic today as well. For whatever
I'm lame. I was going to wear my Revision 3 hat, but I couldn't find it, so I put my Mets hat on backwards.
That's cool. You know, you're keeping it real. I respect that.
So imagine Ron, this says Revision 3. So there you go.
Oh, there you go. But, yeah, sure. Revision 3. Love it. Well, before I get to my app, Ron, tell me a little bit about Intellivision, which is your AppCap award choice this week.
I am not a big video gamer, and I always say that I'm a casual gamer, but if anything, I'm a big retro gamer. I love retro video games because those are the games I played with when I was a kid. And my first video game system wasn't the Nintendo, wasn't Sega. I actually had an Intellivision, which came out by Mattel, and it came out in the early 80s, and it was it was long and wood paneled. And that was the one where it had a number pad and a disc on the controller. And me and my sister played this game system for ages. And it's hysterical to see how, as technology has gone on, to see the Intellivision games get ported to different technologies. So, for example, when I got the first Xbox, I found there was a Xbox collection of old Intellivision games that were ported to play on the Xbox. That was awesome. You can play some of them. There are mods MAME. You can play it in a MAME cabinet or something like that. But when the iPad came out and I saw that there was an Intellivision app that had a bunch of games that you could play on it, I downloaded it immediately. And for some reason, it's brought to you by VH1.
That was going to be my question. What does this have to do with VH1? I mean, I know that they've expanded beyond music videos, but this is very random.
Either they licensed it, or maybe MTV and Viacom bought the rights to all the games. I have no idea.
It's probably a Viacom acquisition.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Probably. So, but it's all about. I know you pulled up Night Stalker on there, which is a good game. But if you go back. Astro Smash was the game that I spent hours playing, and it's basically just like Space Invaders. You know, you're a little guy and you're shooting aliens that are coming down at you, and it's just so much fun. And the fact that you can do it on the iPad just blows my mind. It is exactly like playing it on the old Intellivision, exactly.
I mean, there's got to be another emulator that you can play Astro Smash on.
Oh yeah, no, I've got seven different ways to play it, but now I can play it on the iPad.
But now you can play it on the iPad. Yeah, I mean it's funny when I showed up World of Goo. I don't know, in the last 5 weeks or something, so many people were like, World of Goo is not a new game. What is wrong with you? And it's like, but it's new to the iPad and it's fun to play on the iPad. Everything's okay. I get that. So Astro Smash is one of your, it's copyright 1981. Were you even alive in 1981, Ron?
I was. I was four.
Okay.
We kept our Intellivision plugged into the TV at least until the late 80s. I mean, we used to play it all the time. It was great. So, I don't know. And I know that when I bring this home, I show it to my sister. It's gonna blow her mind. So that's isn't that half what getting these apps for? It's finding somebody to blow their mind with, oh my God, look what I can do. So, yeah.
Well, I love this. Intellivision is $2.99. You can get it at vh1.com/mobile. It's not their only app. Believe it or not. Yeah, it must be a Viacom thing. But it's cool. Intellivision, I love it. I mean, everyone loves the nostalgia of those old 8-bitty games the 8-bit is kind of coming back, actually, in more ways than one.
I think Intellivision might have been 4-bit. It was just really, really early. Really early.
One bit.
Yeah.
You in a bit? Yeah. My app is, this actually, this is the new app. It's been around for a while, but we had a email recently from Martha Truskolaski, which is a really cool last name. She said, I just wanted your opinion of the Square app. It's my understanding it'll work with my iPad and my iPhone. I'm a small business owner, and it appears to be a really good solution to accepting credit cards without having to pay an arm and a leg for a service and monthly fees. But what's your feedback? So this actually gives me a reason to show you what the Square app, it's actually a device, but it also works with an app, is because it is really cool. This is a company that was based in San Francisco. If you can see here on the side of my iPad, I've got this little, it's a square. I don't really know what else to call it. It's the square box, I guess.
You've got a newer one than I do. I've got an older one than you do.
I got my Square device not too long ago. It was definitely not, it was probably not a first-run device.
Mine is a little thicker than yours, I think.
Mine is definitely thinner.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
So, well, in any case, what you do is if you go to the website is squareup.com, you basically sign up, you register. It's totally free. The iPad or iPhone app is also free. The device, this little guy, is free. You tell them where to mail it. I got mine in the mail within about 3 days. So you say, okay, this is awesome. What do I do now? Well, if you launch the, so I have the Square app launched here on my iPad, and it's just going to be, it's going to be in portrait mode. That's just the way it goes. So I've got my device here. So let me just try to make sure that we don't miss anything. So at this point, what I've basically got is a little cash register. Now, if there's a variety of ways we can use this, but what I've kind of done is I've set up something that, let's say I was a small business owner and I sold a variety of things, and one of those things was wine. And every time I sold a glass of wine, it was $5. So I've already set this up. So I've said, you know, I added a little picture that associates my wine with a wine purchase. I've set it at $5. You can add tax based on where you are. In San Francisco, it's like, gosh, 9.5 or something like that. But, you know, depending on where you are, the sales tax might be different. In this case, I've just left it off because, I don't know, maybe I'm working under the table. Who knows? But so somebody owes me $5, and I go ahead and hit charge, and they could give me cash, and this is just sort of a way to keep track of my tender. Or if they pay by credit card, at this point, I could enter in the card, which is very cumbersome, and that's like so old school. Or, and full disclosure, I'm going to use my Muni Clipper card, which is not a credit card because I can't figure out a way to show you guys without also showing you a credit card number. So just let's pretend that this is an actual credit card, right? And I have tried this out, so I can vouch for it that it works. Over here on the side, what you do is, and it's going to say, we can't read your card. What you do is you just slide your card through the little Square device. And I guarantee you it's easy to do, you know? I mean, it's just like sliding it through an ATM machine somewhere. Yep. It took me a couple tries to figure, I've got the, you know, at first I had the little device backwards, and so I kept not reading the card. And so, you know, you've got to do it a certain way, but it's not hard once you've got it set up a certain way. And at that point, Square says, yep, I recognize this card. You want to charge this card? And you say, yeah. And it says, okay, here's the signature, because the person, of course, has to sign for, make sure that you're not ripping them off, you know. So Jane Smith signs for the $5 wine that she bought from me. And our transaction is done. The money goes into my bank account, and as a small business owner, or as an individual, or, you know, whatever the reason is that you made the purchase, Square gets money by taking 2.75% plus 15 cents for swipe transactions and a little bit more for keyed-in transactions.
It's no worse than PayPal. I mean, no. Like it's and like the thing is that what's great about Square is that it's, if you're a small business person, and especially if you're doing, like, I know a lot of people who go to like craft fairs or like things out in the wild. If you've got Wi-Fi access or if you have an iPad 3G, you can take this with you and take credit cards at like the flea market or something like that. It can totally help your business.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. Prager and I, also friends with Prager, Prager and I love to go and get a tasty beverage on a regular basis. And we're always owing each other. It's like, who got last one? You know, like last Thursday we went out for drinks. I owe you a few beers, right? That kind of thing. It's like between friends, you can do things like that. But let's say, yeah, you went out to dinner with a group of 12, and you know how that can get really messy and people owing you and you might not see them again for another few months and this and that. This is a good way, if everyone trusts each other and there's, you know, it's not going to be weird. This is just a really good way to make sure that we're all squared. Ha ha. It's squared. Ha. That was actually intentional. I didn't even mean to do that. You're squared away on money, because money can, you know, can make people feel weird unless we all feel like it's fair. So I love this idea. I mean,
it's great. It's great. Especially also, like, if you, like, let's say, you know, like you're going in with friends on somebody's birthday present, and let's say, you know, everybody owes $50. You can just say, hey, give me a credit card. You can charge, you know, and just take your friends' credit cards. If you don't mind losing a couple of bucks to Square to pay for the service, it's great. It's a great way to transfer money between friends and family and that sort of thing.
So, totally agree. And as you mentioned, yeah, I mean, it's PayPal-ish rates. I mean, Square has got to make money somewhere. Yeah. They're giving you everything else for free. But it's also, you know, if you've got a little store and you're selling some cookies, it's like, you're not going to ask somebody to log into their PayPal account and transfer money to you. And that's just like, that doesn't really make sense. They just want to give you their credit card or cash and leave. So I love Square.
Kid, I want to see kids outside of the lemonade stand taking payments via Square this summer.
Me too, and I bet that they are. If anyone knows any kid, or if any kid has done this themselves, or adult, I'm not saying adults can't have lemonade stands, whatever, float your boat, let us know, and I want pictures, or it didn't happen. So, Martha, I hope that, you know, we gave it a good enough review for you to see if it's right for you or not. That's squareup.com, and again, the app and the little device, once you sign up, everything's free until you start charging people. And then, you know, they get a little cut of it. Ron, we've come to the end of iPad today, and I'm not going to cry, even though I want to, because I know that in the future you will be back.
Sure.
On a future episode, because you're so much fun to talk to.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I thank you for, I thought that, you know, I'd rather have you sitting across from me, but I thought that this all went fine. I feel like I was able to show off the apps that you were talking about. I think it worked out okay.
It's technology working for us. It's fantastic.
So the next time, if for any reason you can't come up to Petaluma, and I hope you can, but if you can't, we know that we can still make a show through the magic of technology in the Skypeosaurus.
It's amazing. Who knew?
It is. Yeah. That's it for this episode of iPad Today. Thanks to Ron Richards. Remember, you can subscribe a million different ways at twit.tv/IPT and watch all of our past episodes, because I guarantee you we've talked about everything except for the stuff that we haven't. Leo will be back in 2 weeks. Next week's guest is a big mystery, but I'll figure out before next Thursday. That's it for iPad Today. I'm Sarah Lane. See you next time. Ow! Ron, you're supposed to howl.
Ow!
There you go.